KBOO.fm/Kickstarter and help KBOO build a city of media makers. That's KBOO.fm/Kickstarter.
Tune in to KBOO March 8th for a 24-hour celebration of women through music, cultural, and public affairs programming in honor of International Women's Day. From 5:30 a.m. on March 8th to 5:30 a.m. the next day, KBOO will continue our annual tradition of celebrating the achievements of women, as well as pushing for parity, recognition, equity, and equality for women and women-identified folks in our community and in our world. The schedule for the March 8th 24-hour celebration of International Women's Day is posted at kboo.fm/IWD2018.
No classrooms, no teachers, no students at KBOO. Only community members sharing their skills with one another and passing on what they've learned from another DJ to the next generation of programmers. We believe that all have something to teach and we all have something to learn. Knowledge should be free to access. Your support for KBOO ensures this. Help us build a city of artistic media makers. Long live DIY Radio and join us on Kickstarter today.
Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Donate to the campaign and share it with your friends. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
KBOO.com/flashpoints.
Pledges, we're turning it over to Flashpoints, and they got a big show for you, so stay tuned. We're out for now. Peace.
KPFA, KPFB, Berkeley 88.1, KFCF in Fresno.
Today on Flashpoints, we celebrate legendary linguist, political activist, author of over 100 books, Noam Chomsky, with a brand new speech delivered in Berkeley, California last night in honor and support of the Middle East Children's Alliance and the amazing founder, Barbara Lubin. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We have a treat for you. Noam Chomsky was in town, 89 years old, over 100 books. Here, let me just read a few of these books. Deterring Democracy, For Reasons of State, Turning the Tide, U.S. Intervention in Central America and the Struggle for Peace, American Power and the New Mandarins, The Washington Connection and Third World Fascism, After the Catechism, Power, Postwar Indochina, On Power and Ideology Toward a New Cold War. I mean, this goes on and on. This is my hero. If you come into my office, I admit it, you're going to see a poster of a film made about the life and times of Noam Chomsky the size of my wall. What an extraordinary human being. Again, he was in town to celebrate the great work of the Middle East Children's Alliance, and KPFA was a co-sponsor, and we are delighted now to present you excerpts of Noam Chomsky, introduced by the amazing Barbara Lubin.
30 years ago, when I came back from Palestine, I decided with Howard, we had lunch together, and we decided we wanted to do something about what I had seen. I was shocked. I really couldn't believe a lot of the things I saw. I went to this forest where my family, my grandparents, had planted trees in memory of people in our family who were no longer alive. And on one hand, I watched and saw these trees, and then on the other hand, I was in a village the next day when the Israelis came and uprooted about 100 fruit trees in this village. And so on one hand, we plant them, on the other hand, we take them and kill them. It was everything that I saw on that trip was completely different than what I had learned from my family, from my Hebrew school, which I was thrown out of. But We decided that we would start an organization to work to make things better for children in Palestine. And we got a tiny office up on Chaddock, and Howard had this old computer from when he was worked at the Daily Cal. And I brought my sofa in, so I would sort of lay on the sofa and decide what we should do. And Howard would do it. But we decided we'd have an advisory board. And the very first person that we called was Noam Chomsky. And I was so anxious about calling him. I mean, Noam Chomsky. And I talked to him a little bit about my trip and what I saw and what I wanted to do, and asked him if he would join our advisory board. And he immediately said, of course. And he did. He was the first person to join. I'm very grateful that Noam did that. I'm going to stop in a minute, but I did want to just share this with you. It's on the back of one of his books. And it says that Chomsky ranks with Marx, Shakespeare, and the Bible as one of the 10 most quoted sources in the humanities. More than the Bible. Please welcome Noam Chomsky.
Keep me honest, more or less. There's a great deal to say about the current situation in Israel-Palestine, the troubled region generally. News ranges from good to truly ominous, and in between it ranges from awful to hideous. Let me start with some good news. The good news is that Mecca is alive and well. It's continuing the marvelous work that it's been doing for 30 years under Barbara's remarkable leadership. And there's real prospects for progress. They're often obscured by prevailing and understandable gloom. I'll return to that at the end. But let's begin with what's truly ominous. There is a growing likelihood of a regional war, a major war, which could be devastating. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned a few days ago, I'm quoting him, that an all-out war between Israel and Hezbollah might break out at any minute, engulfing the Middle East, even though he thinks neither party wants to fight. Sometimes a spark is enough to unleash this kind of conflict, and there are, unfortunately, plenty of sparks. Joost Hilterman of the International Crisis Group, who's very well informed, has been issuing similar warnings. These assessments were sharply criticized by Nicholas Noe, a very experienced and highly credible analyst. He argues that these assessments are far too optimistic. He said, points out, he estimates that Israel has already carried out thousands of military missions in Syria, and there's little reason, everyone agrees, that to expect that Israel will acquiesce in having foreign forces, Iranian, Russian, remaining in Syria, certainly anywhere near the Golan Heights, the Syrian territory that's illegally annexed by Israel. Iran and Hezbollah are constructing precision missile facilities military infrastructure in Syria, Noe points out, perhaps beginning in Lebanon as well. That's a deterrent that Israel will not accept. Noe argues further, and this is his criticism of the others, that elements on both sides may actually want war. And there are, unfortunately, statements and even active measures that lend some credibility to this judgment. If there is a war, it would be an utter catastrophe. Israel's already announced its plans, a massive invasion by ground and air of Lebanon in an effort to destroy Hezbollah's retaliatory capacity. That's an outcome that's very unlikely, as Israeli military strategists must understand. In response to an invasion, there would almost certainly be a major missile attack on Israel, which would instantly invoke what Israel calls its Dahiya doctrine. A doctrine is named after an area of South Beirut that was devastated by the Israeli army, the IDF, in retaliation for resistance to Israel's 2006 invasion of Lebanon. The doctrine calls for overwhelming force against civilian targets in response to any resistance. It's already been invoked several times in Gaza, in 2009, in Israel's assault, Operation Cast Lead, and again, even more destructively, in the horrendous assault of 2014, Operation Protective Edge, which left several thousand Palestinians dead, including 500 children. Israel and Hezbollah have publicly locked themselves into what Israeli officials call the kindergarten scenario. What they mean is that an Israeli attack on precision missile factories in Syria or Lebanon will lead to counterstrikes against Israeli military bases and factories. And then the process begins to escalate in a familiar fashion to the point where kindergartens or anything else will be obliterated. Lebanon would likely be virtually destroyed, much of the remnants of Syria as well, also Gaza, according to Israeli military authorities, fairly serious damage in Israel as well, could even extend beyond, all the way to global war, which would in effect be terminal. That's not unlikely in the near future. Things are building up to that. But even if these immediate threats can be contained, there's more that's lurking not far behind. Israel has always made it very clear that it will accept no challenge to what it calls its qualitative military edge, QME. And that's now being threatened. So the most serious threat is nuclear. There's an Israeli strategic analyst, Chuck Freilich, recently pointed out in Haaretz that the countries of the region are developing nuclear energy. And with current technology, nuclear energy can easily morph to nuclear weapons. That would decisively undermine Israel's QME. It's what Israel calls a nightmare that it cannot tolerate. That does raise an immediate question, which extends well beyond this immediate case, which is severe enough. And the question is there a way to eliminate nuclear weapons in the Middle East? Actually, there's a very simple answer to that question. Establish a nuclear weapons-free zone with verifiability, which is easily possible. That would not only end this ominous threat, but it would also end any threat that Iran is alleged, I stress alleged, to pose with its nuclear policies. So the question is there any barrier to this? Well, Iran is certainly not a barrier. They've been vigorously advocating this for some time. What about the Arab states? They're the ones who actually initiated the proposal, Egypt, 20 years ago, and they too were strongly calling for it regularly. In fact, the rest of the world also agrees, almost. There's an exception, familiar exception, one barrier, the United States. Most recently, Obama and Clinton in 2015. Every 5 years, there's a review session of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. The latest was 2015, and Obama, Clinton spoke for Obama, rejected this proposal and was quite explicit about the reasons. The reasons are no proposal can be accepted that calls for Israel's nuclear program to be placed under the auspices of the International Atomic Energy Agency, or that calls on Washington, or in fact anyone, to release information about Israeli nuclear facilities and activities, including information pertaining to previous nuclear transfers to Israel. That kills it. So no nuclear weapons-free zone, and we therefore march on to possible terminal war. The United States happens to be opposed to the entire world on this issue. Even the usually quite compliant Yukiya Amano, who's head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, usually follows U.S. Demands pretty closely. But in this case, he did ask the foreign ministers of the 151 member states of the NPT to share views on how to implement a resolution, I'm quoting him again, demanding that Israel accede to the Non-Proliferation Treaty